I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE, where President Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed was with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Beijing this week. Both, like the international community, condemn Israel's invasion of Rafah, enabled by the USA, UK and EU nations. Today, voters in fellow BRICS member and biggest democracy in the world, India, will decide who they want as prime minister in the final stage of its 18th general election. And OPEC Plus meet in Vienna to defy US calls to increase energy output. It's also the anniversary through the 1982 signing of the landmark INF nuclear weapons treaty between the USA and Russia, torn up by Donald Trump, catalyzing a world today where Israel, NATO and Russia now name-check the foreseeable use of nuclear weapons, whether it be in Gaza or Ukraine. Joining me from Falls Church in Virginia in the USA is a former US Army officer of 30 years. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson was chief of staff at a State Department which, like Antony Blinken's, appeared an unconditional supporter of Israel. Thank you so much, Colonel, for coming back on burning and beheaded babies in Rafah, multiple Hiroshima's worth of TNT equivalent on Gaza, and today the anniversary of the now-ended INF nuclear treaty. How near is the world to nuclear use? Now, Senior Senator Lindsey Graham talking about Israel and nuclear weapons. Just the other day, a congressman said Gaza should be nuked.
It's interesting that you bring up the INF Treaty. It was Colin Powell's greatest, he thought, achievement with President Reagan when he was National Security Advisor and Deputy. And he said it was the most important nuclear weapons treaty of all because those weapons were the most dangerous of all. And now we've destroyed them, starting with George Bush and the ABM Treaty, which was an unbridled, stupid, unwise act to abrogate that treaty. And he did it essentially because the neoconservatives in his government wanted him to, so that, one, they could make money off the enormously expensive apparatus associated with BMD, but also because they hated the world, as they do everybody other than us, and wanted to make sure that in the future they could defend themselves against a nuclear strike, contemplating that they would launch that strike. So that's how dangerous eliminating the INF Treaty was. And throw the others into it. And I don't want to leave out the conventional forces in Europe treaty. You may have seen recently former Luftwaffe General Harald Koja gave a disquisition, an hour-long presentation, a brilliant presentation, erudite, citing Alexander the Great, Clausewitz, number of other people. But he had described how stupid, how unwise our strategy is today in what we're doing in Ukraine and Gaza and elsewhere. I don't know where this country's going, but I do know it's not any positive place anytime soon.
I mean, just on the massacre in Rafah, the pictures of which are being beamed around the global south if they're not being broadcast on what's been called, more often than not, NATO propaganda media that you have in the US and in NATO nations. When National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, Biden's advisor, said as regards why the US is sending weapons to Israel, committing genocide, according to most people around the world, he said, what we're going to be looking at is whether there is a lot of death and destruction from this operation. As regards the May the 15th, another $1 billion of U.S. public money sent to Netanyahu. Did he facilitate this Holocaust in Rafah?
Of course he did. Everyone who's complicit in it has facilitated it, from President Joseph Biden down to the lowest member of the United States government, who now has not walked out and resigned in shame and anger over the policy. Let's back up just for a minute. If you look at what is happening in the ICJ and the ICC, we are seeing the first display of more or less balanced international justice. In the past, the ICC, basically a captive of the non-signatory power, the United States, only went after black people in Africa. And then when the Balkans erupted, they went after their first white people, Radovan Karadzic and Slobodan Milosevic, but still going after people that the CIA and the United States declared their enemies. Now suddenly they've grown up. Now suddenly they've got a pair of cojones. Now suddenly they're actually doing international justice. And look at what the great bastion of international justice heretofore has said about that. We have even had Congress members who have called the family and members of the ICC and threatened them. This is not the way a hegemon or a decent country or a country interested in its reputation and future acts. It's the way a country acts that is lost and building the rest of the world, like the BRICS, for example, into a balancing entity to take care of it. And mark my words, that will happen.
So you see that as the mask being off, because a lot of people say the International Caucasian Court, as you intimate, gave him another month, the Israelis, to continue committing genocide, and were even-handed. They equated resistance to occupation with the response to October the 7th and arguable continual violations of UN Security Council resolutions in West Bank, in Jerusalem, that are continuing right now.
But that was an astute move, in my view. Jurisprudence is jurisprudence, but you have to live in the world. And it was a very balanced decision to take the three principal leaders of Hamas and Yoav Gallant and Bibi Netanyahu on the other side. I'd have thrown some other people in there. I'd have thrown Ben-Gvir in there for sure, bloodthirsty zealot that he is. Ben-Gvir would kill every Palestinian man, woman, and child in a heartbeat if he had the apparatus and the method to do it. So I'd have thrown him in there just to make it a little more balanced, 3-3, if you will. But the court has to live in the world, and I think it's a good decision.
Yeah, well, it hasn't stopped the killing. And, of course, there have been reports that there were threats to the judges before they were making their deliberations. But you mentioned Ben-Gvir. You know, the Israeli Labour Party chief said that Gvir and Netanyahu were collaborators in the killing of Rabin in Israel. Do you think that? Well, maybe you can tell me how, because of course they deny it about that. And can you tell?
Well, if you watch the video, you watch the video that the Israeli filmmakers put together, and of course that we squashed as soon as it crossed the ocean and was shown in this country. But it's a brilliantly put together video because about 2/3 of the video, the documentary, is actual footage, including actual footage of the assassination. And from that video, made by Jewish filmmakers, mind you, in Israel, that video shows how Netanyahu stirred up the crowds, got the crowds to be violent and uproarious, and knew exactly what he was doing, knew what would happen, probably even knew the group from which the assassin would come. And of course, after the assassination, some years later, he resurrected him and made him a hero in the settler community. So Bibi was as responsible for the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin as we, the United States of America, are now responsible for the genocide in Gaza.
What, and that kind of thing was known by U.S. intelligence services? It was known in the State Department when you were chief of staff?
You bet.
Well, then, right now,
We've known that for years.
Do you think Blinken realizes that Netanyahu could be assassinated at any moment?
That would be, you know, people have asked me that question, but I've said, you don't understand the right versus the middle and the left. My father used to put it this way. The left and the middle will bankrupt you. The right will kill you. The left and the middle have no desire, no inclination to go out and shoot people or to blow people up or whatever. But the right does. The right are Nazis. The right are Trotskys. The right are Lenins. I'm sorry. They are people who want to kill to achieve their purposes. And so that's the people to be scared of, the Netanyahus, the Ben-Gvirs, and so forth. The damage can be done in other ways. As my father used to say, the left will bankrupt you, but they won't kill you. It's the right that will kill you. It's the Hitlers of the world that will kill you.
Well, since we last spoke, of course, the president of Iran has died in a helicopter accident. What were your first thoughts about that? I saw the NATO propaganda media talking about how unpopular he was and that there's going to be regime change in Tehran, and then suitably not show the millions on the streets of Iran right across the country mourning him. What were your first thoughts when you heard Raisi had died in the helicopter accident so soon after this calibrated response to the U.S. armed bombing of the Israeli bombing of the consulate in Damascus?
Well, that wasn't Raisi's doing other than approving it. That was a very sophisticated group within the Iran Revolutionary Guard that did that. My first reaction was, I want to see what happened. I want to see some film. I got my wish. And I'm a helicopter pilot, over 3,000 hours, 1,000 plus of them in Vietnam in combat. And I saw the conditions under which that helicopter went down. And those conditions were the kind that, for example, destroyed a lot of Hindis that the Russians flew in Afghanistan, because you get into weather situations that are so desperate with a heavily loaded helicopter. And let's face it, Iranian helicopters aren't very well maintained, because we have sanctioned the bejesus out of the aircraft repair parts regimes, so they can't get anything.
So, mind you, they said it was an old Bell helicopter from which they can get parts from third parties very easily. I should say I lived in Iran for quite a while.
Yeah, but it's tough. It's really tough. I've seen some of the aircraft. I wouldn't fly in them.
Okay, so you're obviously leaning on the side of accident, even though, as you said just before, you know what the other side is capable of.
Yeah, I do, but there's some things that just aren't conspiracies. And he'd just come out of a dam celebration, as I understand it, in Azerbaijan, where they were celebrating the joint potential for the joint construction of a very important dam there. And the weather was just absolutely abominable. I would not have flown had I been the pilot.
Now, could Biden, who's clearly suffering with his base ahead of November's election, divert attention from Gaza to what is happening in Europe? Because that battle, that conflict, the proxy war, has disappeared a little from the headlines of NATO nation media. What do you make of this seeming debate about whether the U.S. should, like Britain, allow weaponry to target Russia within Russia?
It's a stupid debate. It's an unwise debate. It's a cruel debate. It's a brutal debate, and it makes no sense whatsoever. Let's just take, for example, the recent shot at Russia's early warning system for ballistic missiles shot from the United States at Russia. That is the worst possible thing you can do with regard to their strategic warning system. So had it been the situation that existed a couple of times in my experience when I was inside the military, there would have been a debate about whether or not to launch. Because when you take out something that serious, that critical for over-the-horizon radar warning about ballistic missiles coming into your country, you don't have very long to debate and very long to decide you're going to shoot back. This was a very unwise move. It was a stupid move, first giving them the missiles that could do it, and then apparently approving the target that they chose to shoot. Makes no sense at all unless you're trying to get a nuclear war started, and God forbid that anybody's trying to do that. No sense at all.
Colonel, I'll stop you there. More from the former chief of staff at the U.S. State Department after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with retired Colonel Larry Wilkerson, former Chief of Staff at the State Department. So, Colonel, at the end of part one, you were talking about this nuclear weapons radar system, the Russian one that was targeted by Ukrainian forces. So you're saying that that targeting could only have been done with NATO troops in situ in Ukraine? I know that Germany and France now say that it's okay to attack Russia with the weapons or supplies.
I'm not saying that, but Zelensky's not stupid, and the Ukrainian military is not stupid, at least the leadership. So why would they select that target without the permission of Washington, knowing that that target was a severe escalation of what had happened up to that point? When you go, it would be like when I was in the military, for example, we had distant early warning all across North America and elsewhere. It would be like someone shooting that. I remember Bill Perry, when he was Secretary of Defense, telling me about an incident where something like that happened, but it happened on a computer, but the person reporting it to Bill when he was Secretary of Defense didn't know it was the computer, didn't know it was a computer glitch. He got a call at 3 a.m. in the morning, and he had 18 minutes to make up his mind on calling the president and advising the president to launch an attack. Those are the kinds of things you just don't want to do. You don't want to go there. You don't even want to start the process. And taking out a part of their distant early warning line, if you will, is a really stupid act.
Because we have some reports that the UK snap election was because Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister there, didn't want to become a wartime leader. The UK Chief of the Army, General Patrick Sanders, said prepare for war with Russia. There are reports the government is telling people in Britain to pack 3 days shopping of food and supplies. What is seriously going on here as regards people saying the war's already begun with Russia directly?
Well, it's a good question, but if you look at the decisions that are being made and the money that's being passed about...
Conscription, I should add, as well.
People, in yeah, Britain. People that are... Jens Stoltenberg, for example. I would have fired Jens Stoltenberg a long time ago. The man thinks he's in charge of an army or something. He's not in charge of anything except a talking shop in Brussels. But these are Macron from France. He thinks he's a latter-day Charles de Gaulle. He couldn't hold a candle to the former general. But these are the kind of people we have in NATO now. So one of the reasons I said NATO expansion was absurd, even though here we're talking about some people who've been in NATO for some time, though the French are just recent rejoiners.
Well, you have to remind me who was NATO boss when you were at the state, the chief of staff at the State Department. But surely, in fairness to Stoltenberg, he can't say a word without the imprimatur of Antony Blinken and Jake Sullivan, surely. Or is he just talking?
Probably true, because we picked him. We picked him and we made sure he got there. Just as we helped pick the current governments in Sweden, Norway, Finland, and elsewhere. Been working on it for a long time. I'm not sure they at all represent their people who fundamentally are still for some distance from NATO and even neutrality, even with Putin's invasion of Ukraine. But we engineered Jens Stoltenberg just as surely as we helped to engineer the victories of those people now predominant in those countries, those new members of NATO.
Well, I'm not sure they'll work out in Georgia. You know, the newspapers this week, I got the Japanese Financial Times and that family-owned New York Times, both like clockwork. One headline, Georgia, keep Putin from taking a new pawn about the massive support for American policy in Georgia, and the Japanese FT demonstrator with Georgian people trying to demonstrate against a law which the European Union anyway is going to institute in their countries because of the perceived Russian threat. It's not going to work in Georgia, is it, the overthrow of color revolution?
Who knows? But I smell Bill Burns and the CIA, although Bill would be a reluctant participant, I think. I don't know anymore. Bill's turned into a different person than when I knew him when he was Assistant Secretary for Near East and Asia. It's
why
CIA
does that happen? Because he was
it.
Ambassador to Moscow, of course, before he became head of the present head of the CIA.
And he's the one that sent the very, very graphic and correct cable back saying "Nyet" means "Nyet," referring to Putin's appreciation of what would happen if we really looked like we were going to make Ukraine a member of NATO.
So we just don't know what happened to him.
Well, I think, you get so close to power and you have that additional power of being able to do almost anything, and that's the CIA today, anything with a capital A, and it goes to your head swiftly, and you have the first customer, as the president is now known. Never used that language before, but now they use that language. And you understand why intelligence, real intelligence, even accurate real intelligence, gets turned into policy because the policy dictates what the intelligence can say. I had a conversation today with someone who was asking me about an article about INR, the little State Department intelligence entity, which was right about Vietnam, right about Iraq, right about Afghanistan, and so forth, they said. There's an article out to that effect. Was that true? And I said, well, it's true with respect to one of the 16 then agencies within the intelligence community, but they're very small. They're very talented, very professional. They're all experts regionally, language-wise, and so forth. But it's not the truth that they were correct in the sense the article imports. They offered alternative advice to the then DCI Director of Central Intelligence or other intelligence communities within the complex. But they were more or less correct in the general scheme of things in all those situations, but no one listens to them. My boss, Secretary Powell, did not listen to them when we went over to the CIA to prepare him for the WMD presentation with regard to Iraq in February of 2003. I asked him to let me take the Assistant Secretary of State for Intelligence and Research to the CIA with me, and he forbade me to do that. At that point, I should have resigned and wish I had, but I've later figured out why he didn't want me to take him over there, because then he would have had a real axe to throw at George Tenet when he needed to. But if he threw that axe at George Tenet, he'd be throwing it at Dick Cheney and George Bush, and he didn't want to do that.
George Tenet, then boss of the CIA.
Right.
The DNI reports are so odd in recent years. They've been mentioning this program as if it's some kind of, amazingly important cog in geopolitics. I wish it were, as such, as the DNI said in their footnotes. But, I mentioned we were talking about the radar system. What about the Crocus City Hall attack, Moscow Crocus City Hall attack? Does that have any hallmarks of any U.S. proxies, even?
I'll tell you what it has a hallmark for me. It has a hallmark for what I have seen on more than one occasion, which is not just Iran-Contra, where it really got into the papers and really was publicized and almost got Ronald Reagan impeached. People don't understand how close Reagan came to being impeached over Iran-Contra. But I hadn't seen it in a while until I came back into government, and then I realized it was alive and well. And that is the NSC going operational, the National Security Council, statutory body designed by the Congress to more or less check the president, not do anything other than that. That is to say, they didn't want any more Franklin Roosevelts and so forth. So they created this body of people with whom the president would have to consult, to include his own primary cabinet members. Well, the NSC has gone operational. So answer your question, long way to get to the answer, but it had all the hallmarks of Victoria Nuland. Victoria Nuland had contacts with the Azov Battalion. She had contact with other, shall we say, less than savory characters in Ukraine. And in addition, through our actions in Syria, we had contact with ISIS leaders. CIA and the U.S. Marines actually got into a firefight in Syria and almost killed one another or caused casualties until they realized what was happening. Because one side was after ISIS and the other side was with ISIS. So it had all the hallmarks of a Victoria Nuland parting shot after, she knew she was going to be fired or she knew she was going to be removed. She goes rogue and she provides the contacts to Ukraine with ISIS members and you have what you have. I don't know that happened, but I would not be surprised if it did.
Which I think will shock a lot of, obviously, Russians and people around the world. Victoria Nuland, that explains why just the other day she replied to this show. She was going to come on. She suddenly passed coming on this show. Why did she go, by the way? Because obviously you'd think someone like that's career would have been ended by the leaked phone call over the Maidan coup. All those years ago, but yet Korea just went from strength to strength. How far did she go to get herself fired by a Blinken State Department structure under Joe Biden?
Well, I think what I was just postulating or what I was speculating on got her fired. I think she was rogue. I think she had used her position and gone rogue. She was doing things that maybe General Breedlove, the old boy from Europe, who used to ride his motorcycle down into the environs and talk to people. People don't realize Breedlove was at Ramstein for almost 3 years before he became SACEUR for 4 years. And he loved to ride his bicycle all over Europe, his motorbike, big old motorbike. And Breedlove, I compare Breedlove to Curtis LeMay, if you're familiar with the movie Dr. Strangelove, the general in that movie. is a caricature of Curtis LeMay, the man who bombed Tokyo and killed more people in the firebombing than we killed with the two atomic bombs. Most Americans don't know anything about him. And the man who, outside the room when Kennedy was deliberating with the Executive Council about Cuba in October of 62, said, according to two sources I have talked to, that man ought to be killed, because he knew Kennedy was not going to elect the military option with regard to Cuba. These are the kind of characters that get this country in trouble from time to time, and Victoria Nuland just added her name to the list.
Well, just finally, it looks possible that Trump will be elected in November. Trump, of course, who, as regards what you were talking about, CIA cutouts in Al-Qaeda and ISIS-Daesh in Syria, he assassinated Qasem Soleimani, one of the commanders of the fight against ISIS-Daesh in Syria. But Trump did say recently
he ordered it. He ordered it. He wouldn't have the guts to go there and do it.
Well, he didn't serve in the military, all right. I think there was a good reason for that. He's going to be the next president. Got to be nice to him. He said in some interview recently that he could maybe pardon Julian Assange, without whom journalists today are suffering all around the world, arguably, as he's incarcerated in that Supermax prison. Biden won't, I suppose. What do you think about the chances of Julian Assange living to fight another day as he's tortured in London by British authorities?
I'll put it succinctly. If Trump would pardon him, I'd vote for Trump.
Colonel Larry Wilkerson, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for the show. Our condolences to the survivors of US-UK-EU bombs in Palestine. We'll be back on Monday to ask the grandson of a signatory to Israel's 1948 Declaration of Independence whether genocide in Gaza means the end of Israel. Until then, you can keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.